Thank you very much, everyone, for coming, for the Rav. I appreciate the honor and the opportunity to come back to Ramat Beit Shemesh and to a little bit follow up, I guess, on what I said last time. I'll start, you know, from the beginning also for the people who weren't here, because it's a similar topic of Agolas Kelim. But we're going to start, I just want to start with, in general, cleaning for Pesach, a lot of people get nervous about, and a lot of people get a little bit compulsive about. And there's reason for it, because we know that Chametz, unlike other Isurim, is something that's not bottled b'shishim on Pesach. It's something that is also even a mashu, even the smallest amount of chametz is osur. And at least on Pesach, even if it's mixed in with more than 60 times its volume of other things, chametz does not become bottled. So we have to be very careful to get rid of all the chametz and all the flavor of chametz that might come in contact with Pesach food. And also, the Arizal says that anyone who is careful not to eat even the slightest amount of chametz on Pesach can be assured he won't do any averus the entire year. And that's a pretty big guarantee, which is pretty hard to live up to. But the minhag in Klal Yisrael for many hundreds of years has been to be extremely careful on cleaning for Pesach. It's accepted in all of the Pesachim that there are chumras we take on for Pesach that we would not take on the whole year. However, on the other hand, everything has its limits and its limitations. And cleaning for Pesach is a mitzvah, and mitzvahs are meant to make someone happy. We're supposed to come into Yom Tov, we're supposed to have Simchas Yom Tov, we have to have Oinig Yom Tov, we're not supposed to be nervous and exhausted and depressed. So we have to try to find the balance between cleaning and kashering properly, and making sure we're taking care of and eliminating all of the chametz and tam flavor of chametz that might possibly be in our house. And on the other hand is, we have to find a way of doing it that's not going to be overly compulsive. I think that the best way to do that is by understanding the halachas properly, both knowing them and understanding the logic behind them. And then we can know what we have to do, what's an obligation, what's a chumrah, and what's not necessary. So just to start with a very basic background, there's basically two main general reasons why we're cleaning for Pesach. One reason is Bayiro Bayimotze. There's an Isra in the Torah to own chametz on Pesach. So we have to check and clean our entire house to make sure that there's no chametz in the house that we could be over Bayiro Bayimotze on. However, Bayiro Bayimotze is more limited, it's more mekel, it's less strict than the Isra of eating chametz. It does not apply on a single crumb. Bayiro Bayimotze requires a kezayis. A person is only over Bayiro Bayimotze if he has a kezayis of chametz, or even if it's not so attractive. If there's a smaller amount of chametz, smaller than a kezayis, but if it's delicious, attractive, so then it's also an obligation to get rid of it because we're afraid you might come to eat it on Pesach. But those are very limited. Anything that's a little bit dirty, it's a little bit stale, and it's more and it's smaller than the size of a kezayis, you don't have to worry about. So in the rest of the house, if you have a little crumbs in a pocket, you're not going to be over by your bayimotze on it. So the cleaning you're doing for bayiro bayimotze is looking for things either that are fresh pretzels or whatever, or something that's larger than a kezayis, which is relatively easier to find. That doesn't take as intense cleaning. However, there's the other issue that we mentioned, which is the more serious issue, is the issue of eating chametz on Pesach. Now, that could again become an issue with the crumbs in your pocket if it's a jacket or a pair of pants you're planning on wearing on Yom Tov, and you could potentially stick your hands in the pocket on Pesach, get crumbs on your fingers, and then touch your food. So any clothes you're wearing on Pesach, you do have to clean the pockets very carefully from crumbs. But anything you're not going to wear on Pesach, there's no need to remove every single last stale crumb. Additionally, for example, there's no need to get down on your hands and knees with a toothpick and clean in between the balatas on the floor. Because whatever crumbs are there are not going to be an issue of vayiro bayimotze, and they're not going to be a problem to own them on Pesach, and the general minhag, many people have the minhag, which is, I think, a very wise idea, is not to eat any food that falls on the floor on Pesach, unless it's something that can be rinsed off, preferably in a bathroom sink, or outside of the kitchen sink. If utensils fall on the floor on Pesach, you're going to want to rinse them off because you don't want any crumbs on the floor then getting in your food. But again, now, the whole issue is, everything we're questioning, we have to analyze. Is it an issue, is it something that I could potentially come to eat on Pesach? Even if it's something I'm going to come to eat, if it's not edible to a normal person, so then it's less problematic. If it's not edible to a kelev, it's not chametzirah, it's not a problem at all. There is a halach of achshevei, which is a machlokes deraisa drabonim. If I would take something that's not readily edible and pick it up in my hand and take a bite out of it, so then since I showed that I want it, so now even though it's not normally edible, there is an isra on it because I showed to me it's choshev, to me it's valuable. If a little crumb happens to fall in your food, even though you wanted to eat the food, but I didn't care to eat the crumb, so achshavei does not apply here. It's not, again, it's not going to be a problem if it's not edible. So if you've done sponge on your floor with soap, you're not going to have any problem with those crumbs. It's achshavei. But it's a chomer. It's a worthy chomer. It's recommended. So the main focus is obviously the main concern here, the biggest problem is going to be things that come in contact with food. So the main focus of our shiur and of everyone's Pesach cleaning should be on the kitchen, because that's obviously where most of the food is, and most of the food preparation takes place. There are other little things, as I mentioned, in context of food falling on the floor. For example, there are certain practical things where, like the pockets of pants you're going to wear on Pesach, food that falls on the floor. Also, for example, doorknobs. Doorknobs are something that people could often touch with dirty hands during the year. And on Pesach, you're either going to have to, it would be highly recommended to do one of two things. Either every time you touch a doorknob to wash your hands before you touch food or anything that's going to go in your mouth, or, which is hard to always remember, what's easier to remember is, Erev Pesach, day before Pesach, once you've basically finished eating chametz, take a shmata, dip it in a little bit of Fantastic or whatever it is, a little cleaning solution, and just go and make a quick wipe over all the doorknobs in the house. So now any chametz that was there is hopefully cleaned off, or is at least rendered inedible. And now you don't have to worry if you touch your doorknobs on Pesach. Similar thing would apply, say, to phones. A cordless phone, everyone gets phone calls all the time, even when they're in the middle of eating, and you don't always jump up and run and wash your hands before you answer the phone. And on Pesach, you can't always assume that after you hang up from your phone call, you're going to go run out of the kitchen, wash your hands in the bathroom sink before you go back in the kitchen if you were in the middle of cooking something or preparing food or whatever it is. So it's recommended that phones should be cleaned carefully before Pesach. But again, a wipe with a soapy shmata would be good enough. But those are things that become food issues, even though they're not necessarily kitchen issues. But again, we're going to focus on the kitchen. So first I'm going to explain what we're doing, what we're looking for, how we're going to solve it, and then I'm going to go through a list of, I have here maybe 15, 20 examples of different objects in the kitchen, how they should be cleaned and or kashered for Pesach. So number one step is you have to get off from any surface, anything that you're going to be using on Pesach, any residue of chametz. That's the first step. So everything has to be very carefully cleaned. Anything that's going to be used, again, we're talking about things that are going to be used on Pesach. If you have, let's say, a toaster oven that you're not going to use on Pesach because it's not really practical to clean out thoroughly, so anyway you're going to bag it up and put it in your machsan or whatever it is till after Pesach, it's not necessary to go over and scrub it carefully because that would only be a bayiro bayimotze issue. That's an ownership issue. I'm talking about things that you're going to be coming in contact with on Pesach. If you're going to have a kazayis of chametz in it, so then you'll have a problem. Again, you could sell that kazayis, but that you're going to want to get out. So for example is, you can take the toaster, just simply hold it over the garbage can, turn it upside down, shake it out, look inside, make sure there's nothing stuck in the heating element or whatever it is, and that's really all that's necessary to do. Shake it out. You want to scrub it and clean it better? Kol hakavod, but it's not necessary to do more than shake it out and make sure that you don't have half a slice of bread stuck under the heating element or whatever it is. That's enough.
Can you just to be clear, because what you're looking for is a kazayis.
Right.
Can you show a kazayis?
A kazayis is roughly the size of an Israeli matchbox. Israeli matchbox. According to a b'chaim, no kazayis. The small ones, the Israeli matchboxes. So we're talking about, what is it, maybe a third of a slice of bread, let's say. So after we've cleaned and we've gotten all the surfaces we're using for Pesach clean, then becomes the issue. We have to know what things need to be kashered. So there's a couple different rules. So first of all is, I'll go over briefly what I talked about in the previous shiur. The reason we're kashering is, in addition to the issur to eat chametz itself, or any other issur, but now we're talking about chametz, there's an issue to taste the flavor of chametz, or any other issur. So it's presumed that when food, chametz is cooked in a pot, the pot absorbs some of the flavor of the chametz. If the pot is then used again on Pesach, some of that chametz flavor will go into the Pesach food. When you eat that food on Pesach, you will be tasting some chametz in your food. For Pesach, we are machmir that even if the pot was more than 24 hours, and the flavor it's going to give in the food is negative, it's going to be spoiled, it's going to make it taste worse, not better, for Pesach we're still machmir on that. There's an additional issue with cleaning is that we have with kashering is that we want to make sure that all that so we have to make sure that all of the flavor is out of the pots. How do we do that? So we know that flavor goes in by cooking through heat. So the Gemara tells us that kibayla kach polte, the way it goes in is the way it has to come out. Something that absorbed through hot liquid, it was used for cooking a pot. You cooked chalent in it with barley, so it now has flavor of barley of chametz that was cooked into the pot. It went in with hot liquid, you take it out with hot liquid, and we do hagala. So you would immerse the pot in boiling hot water, and then the flavor of chametz that went in the pot will come out into the boiling hot water. It'll still be there in the boiling hot water, but for that, that's not a problem. You'll make sure that either, this is before Pesach, and the pot was not used for more than 24 hours before, so whatever flavor is going in the water is eina ben yaima, it's already spoiled. Or alternatively, you'll make sure that you have 60 times the volume of the pot in the water, so there's bittel, but both of these things we're only relying on because it's not yet Pesach. On Pesach, you cannot kasher things anymore. 60. You need 60, because it's talking about flavor. Flavor is assumed to reach up to a maximum dilution of 60 to 1. So we're always concerned that maybe this is one of those things that reaches 60 to 1. So 60 is always the amount you need for flavor. So on Pesach, we do not kasher on Pesach itself. Everything has to be kashered by Erev Pesach, by noon on Erev Pesach. So that's something that was used through hot liquid. Something that was used to dry heat, which would apply, say, an oven rack, a broiling pan, cookie sheets, something like that. All these examples I'm giving are not really things you're going to practically be kashering to use on Pesach, but I'm just giving them as examples to bring out the underlying halacha, is that all of these things that absorb dry heat directly from the fire, so they need libun, they need direct fire on them to remove the tam. There's two forms of libun. There's libun kal, which is used for things that absorb usually heter tam. Let's say something was fleishig and I want to make it parav, or it became milchig and I want to make it back to parav. So then, libun kal is enough. Libun kal means bringing it up to a temperature where it's generally accepted if you had the fire on one side of, let's say the cookie sheet, the pan, and you'd put a straw on the other side, the straw would burst into flame. So we're talking about roughly the same as paper, we're talking about 450 degrees Fahrenheit. For libun chomer, which is something that absorbed tam iser, you need a much higher temperature of nitzaitzais nitozami menu, that it's going to give off sparks. It's not something we commonly see. You don't usually see things give off sparks today. If you look in a matzah oven, it usually gets hot enough. I think if you go to a steel foundry or whatever, refinery, you'll see hot enough. It's generally accepted by the Paiskim and the Hechsherim that about 900 to 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit is the temperature of libun chomer. Chametz, even though at the time the chametz was absorbed in the kli, and at the time we're kashering it, it's actually still mutter, because a week before Pesach you're allowed to eat chametz. However, we consider as a chomer, but we consider, the halacha considers chametz to be isura bala. We consider it to be isur, and it requires, generally speaking, libun chomer. So anytime we're kashering something, We're going to need to determine what was it used for when it was used for chametz. And based on that, we'll know how to kasher it. Now, what if something is used for mixed usages? Sometimes it's used dry, and sometimes it's used wet. So, just one as an introduction, everything I'm saying now, I'm assuming that the majority of the people here, if not everyone, are Ashkenazim. I'm saying everything al pi da lochs of the Ramah. There are certain things where the Mechaber disagrees, and if someone is Sfaradi and follows the Pesachim of the Mechaber, they should ask a Rav, because I can't cover all the different alternatives. But for this is one example. What I'm about to mention is something actually that the Mechaber is a little bit more makel on. But, so the Mechaber holds, in this case, that we go by the majority. If something was primarily used for cooking, and on occasion it's used for dry heat, so Mechaber holds, go by the majority, and Hagola alone is enough. The Ramah is Machmer, and the Ramah says that you should always do the more chomer one. So if it was primarily used for liquid, occasionally used with dry heat, the Ramah holds you must use Libun to kasher it. There are certain cases when the Ramah will agree to be Mekel. So if we have a combination of different factors or whatever, not something I'm gonna tell you you can apply in your own house, but there are certain cases where you can ask a Rav, and we can go by Rav Tashmishai, but the general rule is we go by even a mute. An example of a practical application of that is a frying pan. A frying pan, you usually have oil on the bottom. So you might say that it should only need Hagola because it's always being cooked with liquid. However, often the oil can dry out and you can end up with a dry contact between the food and the pan. Therefore, the Ramah Paskins, Ashkenazim, require Libun on a frying pan. A deep fryer, not, but a frying pan where the oil could potentially dry up, Libun will be necessary. I'll mention ovens later, but self-cleaning ovens, at least in America, get above 900 to 1,000 degrees. Get them between 900 and 1,000 degrees. So those are the before kashering, at least for Hagola, it's necessary that an object should be completely clean. Because Hagola won't work if there's pieces of chametz stuck on it. Hagola will take out the tam that's in, but if there's something intercepting the water from reaching the wall of the container, so then the Hagola won't draw it out. If anything, you'll just be you're cooking the pot in more chametz. So before doing Hagola on anything, it's necessary to make sure it's completely clean. So if we've determined something needs Hagola, you have to make sure it's completely clean. You also have to wait 24 hours from the last time you used it for anything hot. If something was used for hot chametz only a week ago, and hot water spilled on it within 24 hours before when you want to kasher it, most places come a machmer in that case, since chametz is considered isura, that we're worried that the hot water drew out the chametz and then put it back in, and another 24 hours is generally necessary. So you need completely clean, you need to wait 24 hours, and then you can do agol on it. If something that requires libun, so if we're doing libun chomer on it, which is generally what we're going to be requiring for Pesach, so then, and generally, in general, really, most things need libun chomer. The one time you'd be doing libun kal, the most common practical time to do libun kal would be something that really needs hagola, and for various practical considerations, it's not feasible to do hagola on it. So libun kal is equivalent to hagola. So something that needs libun does not need to be completely clean before, because the fire is going to burn off whatever residue is there. Additionally, it's not necessary to wait 24 hours before doing libun, because the libun is not, the reason we said we need 24 hours is because Hagola draws out the flavor of the chametz, dilutes it in the water, but then the diluted chametz goes back in. So we want to make sure that what's going back in is already a negative flavor. It's already a spoiled flavor. With Libun, at least Libun Chomer, that's not what's happening. The flavor itself is being burned up while it's inside the walls of the pot. So since it's being burned up and turned into ashes, it's being incinerated, there's no need to wait 24 hours till it's a Tam Pogu. So Libun, in a way, is much easier, but practically speaking, we'll see, it's not so easy to do Libun Chomer. Because Libun Chomer requires applying direct fire, bring on every single square inch of the thing we're kashering, and applying it till the metal reaches a temperature of about 900 degrees Fahrenheit. It's not so easy to do that. I have been at generally, these things like Libun are hard to do in your own house. They're not safe to do in your own house. I don't recommend most people do Libun in their own house, with the exception of someone who has a self-cleaning oven, running the oven. So the best thing is that when there's a communal Hagolas Kalim, there's usually also a Libun Kalim. Hopefully the communal Hagolas Kalim, as I understand, is here in Ramat Beit Shemesh, is supervised by the local Rabbonim, and they make sure that everything is done al pi halacha. I have been to a communal Hagolas Kalim where someone brought a frying pan that needed Libun, and the person took his blowtorch and waved it over it for about 10 seconds and said, okay, finished. That's not Libun. It's not Libun and it's not Libun Kal either. It didn't do anything. Mishneh Berurah a couple of times mentions a similar idea that some people thought to do in his days, was they would basically pour alcohol on something and light it on fire. And you'd have flames leaping off of the pot, but it's a relatively cold fire, and it's not going to reach anywhere near the 900 degrees Fahrenheit necessary to be Libun. It's not going to get you up to the 450 degrees Fahrenheit necessary for Libun Kal either. So now, okay, then there's another issue of what type of materials it's possible to kasher. Generally speaking, metal can always be kashered whether by Hagolah or by Libun. I think I mentioned previously, practically speaking, doing Libun on metal, you have to take into account that not all metals can tolerate a temperature of 900 degrees Fahrenheit. For example, aluminum certainly cannot tolerate 900 degrees Fahrenheit. Even stainless steel is not necessarily able to withstand such high temperatures. I don't have it on me, but someone in the OU once gave me a printout. He did research of all different types of steel, because we're familiar with stainless steel, but especially industrial uses, there's many different types of steel, all different alloys of iron with other metals and carbon, different percentages. And he had a printout of maybe 20 different types of steel, and each one of them, what its heat tolerance was. When the different metals mixed together start separating out and it becomes ruined. Most of them were around 930 degrees Fahrenheit. So I think one of them was 880, one was 930. Some of them could tolerate 950 degrees Fahrenheit. You're very borderline on the temperature of Libun. So number one is, it shows that probably that most times people do Libun, they're not getting it above 900 degrees. Because if you get it above 900, but to make sure you don't hit 920 is going to be very hard, unless you're sitting there with a laser thermometer in the other hand. Additionally, there's a problem in halacha is, that anything that could easily get ruined by kashering, you're not allowed to kasher, because we're worried you won't do a good job. You're going to hold back. Very practical. If you know that something will get ruined at 920 degrees Fahrenheit, so you're not going to let it get to 915, because you can't be so exact on everything. So you're going to be careful whether you even let it, you're going to try to get it exactly to 900, and you might end up being a little bit under. So therefore, the halacha is, it's something that could get ruined. You may not do hagolah, you may not kasher. Whether, if it's something that could get ruined by hagolah, the example Shulchan Aruch brings is something made out of ivory, so you can't do hagolah on it. If it's something that could be ruined by libun, you're not allowed to do libun on it. And not only that, but if you did already kasher it, you're still not allowed to use it. B'dieved, that was already kashered, you're not allowed to use it. If the food was already cooked, then it's a different issue, but you're not allowed to use it, even b'dieved. So we have to be very careful not to isolate which types of things can be kashered and can't. But we said, so something metal, you can certainly do hagolah on it. If it needs libun, so it has to be something designed to withstand temperatures well above 900 degrees. Okay. So now we meant, so metal was something. Let's see, let's take another. Wood is something that obviously libun cannot be done on, but hagolah could be done on wood. Wood's something you have to be very careful with, if there's no cracks and crevices that you could have pieces of chametz in it. I don't know how many people use wood kalim generally. I don't know if it's so practical today. Other common things we have in the house are plastic. Plastic is a big machloikis. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein said it was machmer on plastic because he said that we don't know what it is. Plastic is something new. Chazal didn't have it. We don't know if it's something that's kasherable. We don't know if doing hagolah on it will draw out the bleis. Again, it's only relevant hagolah. No one's going to do libun on plastic. I don't think any plastic we have in our house can tolerate 900 degrees Fahrenheit. To an argolon plastic, assuming it's a plastic that's heat tolerant and could be immersed in boiling water for a couple seconds. So, it's still, so Reb Meisher says, we don't know, maybe plastic is like metal and you could get out the flavor, but maybe it's like charis, and I maybe should have mentioned that first, but pottery, charis, is something that the Gemara learns out, we cannot get the flavor out of it, no matter what you do, whether it's Hagolah, even if it's Libun, almost whatever you do, it's not going to get all the flavor out of the charis, it's so porous, and not only it absorbs a lot of flavor, and it retains it, and we can't assume that a Hagolah will draw out all of the flavor from the pottery. Even Libun is not going to be sufficient. The only thing that would work for charis would be putting it back in the kiln that was originally fired in, or a kiln used for firing charis. Even that, and that's not something practical, but charis is something that by nature is not kasherable. It absorbs flavor and it does not give it off. So Reb Meisher says, I don't know, is plastic like metal, or is plastic like charis? Is it like pottery? So therefore Reb Meisher says, plastic cannot be kashered. Many other paiskim, if I remember correctly, Vosner is one of them, I think it's probably a majority of paiskim do allow kashering plastic. Each person should ask their own rav and get their own psak what to do, but here's the case where Reb Meisher is machmer, and I think most paiskim are probably meiko, and it's up to each paiskim to paskin what he says. So that's plastic. Another thing that's common is glass. Glass is a big issue. Glass is another thing where there's a difference between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. The Mechaber holds that glass does not absorb at all. Glass does not absorb flavor, and therefore it's not necessary to kasher anything made out of glass, even if it was used hot. The Ramah is machmer to the other extreme. And the Ramah is concerned that glass is like charis. And the truth is that scientifically, really, there's very little difference between them because they're both primarily silica. And there's difference in what temperature they were fired at and what's the other 20% or whatever. But they are chemically similar. And so the Ramos says that therefore we have to be machmir and we don't do hagola on glass at all. It's like charis, it cannot be kashered. So there's a question of the Paiskim, if I was only talking about Pesach, we're also talking about other things, but since we're talking about Pesach now, for Pesach it is certainly accepted that Ashkenazim do not kasher glass. Fine. So now we've covered, I think, the basic types of materials that you'll usually find in your house. Yes?
Maybe this would be a good time to talk about the different types of materials that counters are made out of?
Okay, good. So I'll do that first. No, I'll answer your question. Okay, stone is also something that needs kashering. It's definitely not like glass. It's more like metal. It's pure stone is something that may be kashered. Something that is 100% stoneware, if you have shayish that is 100% stone, so that it can be kashered. Again, we'll have to discuss exactly how to kasher it when we go through our list of different things and items in the kitchen, but pure stone may be kashered. The question is, what is pure stone? How much of arshayish and granite is pure stone? It is my understanding that most, if not all, of the shayish in this country is not 100% pure stone. It has bonding agents in it, it has coatings on it, and therefore it is potentially problematic to kasher shayish.
And those are plastics?
Those are plastics. So someone who's makel on plastics, then maybe it could be that some of the glues they use, or some of the, say, certainly with the shayish kesar, so there could be a problem, it could be it's charis. I don't know about the other bonding agents used. The coating that they use on it presumably would be like plastic. But the bonding agents, I don't know if they would have a din of charis. In which case
so
they wouldn't be kasherable.
There's something called granite, and what's that?
I don't know. Granite I don't know. I'd have to research individual brands or whatever. I'm not sure different brands and different names exactly what they are.
Is pure stone to your knowledge?
No, I don't know what I don't know specifically something that's pure stone. Shaish what?
Chevroni, really.
The cheap one is that. It does look.
You have to use on window frames.
Right, right.
And the cheapest option for countertops.
Right, is that? I don't know. The truth is, I didn't look into that. It could be. It is. So shaish is a problem. Besides that, just mentioned aside, there's other problems with shaish. Is the practical of how to kasher it. So we'll. when we get to going through specific items, we'll mention. But theoretically, stoneware can be kashered if it's 100% pure stone. Most stoneware, certainly most shayish we have today, is not 100% pure stone. In which case, if the other ingredients are plastics, it's a machlekes apaiskim. If they are ceramic or pottery, if they're going to be considered charis, so then it's not possible at all to kasher. Fine. Okay, so...
Is our common glass the same as the glass the Shulchan Aruch is referring to?
Not necessarily 100%, but I think most Paiskim accept that all of the different types of glasses around today are close enough that they would all have the same halacha. You know, there's even Pyrex, Duralex, even though they do have 5% metals added to them or whatever it is. But if you, I have it at home. I once did research on it and I went online and I checked all many different types of glass, what they are. They're all all the common glasses are roughly 80, if I remember correctly, about 80% silica. The other 20% is the difference between regular plate glass and Duralex, Pyrex, etc. It's a very small difference. Most places can accept that they all have the same halacha. They're all considered glass. Which, in any event, the truth is that it's not really relevant to us. It's because for Ashkenazim who aren't going to kasher glass at all, these things certainly aren't more lenient. The issue is that there are some who want to say that according to Sfaradim who do kasher glass, or according to the Poskim who say the glass can be kashered not for Pesach, but when it's a question of treif that was in the glass, so then there are those who say, since there is this 5 or 10% metal content of Pyrex, that maybe it should have the chumrah of a metal kli and should require Hagolah, even though normally the Mechaber would hold that it does not need any Hagolah. But there's no reason to be more lenient on any other type of glass than on the standard glass Shulchan Aruch is talking about. So according to that, so for Ashkenazim, all glass would be not kasherable for Pesach. Okay. Fine. So we mentioned different things that are needed for kashering. So now, once we've isolated what material it is, if it's a material that is kasherable, and we said now we have to determine what form of kashering is necessary. So we mentioned that something that used direct fire needs libun. Something that was with wet heat needs hagolah. Now there's different forms of hagolah. Depend on what type of wet heat the absorption was created through. If something was used, let's say the example we brought before of a chalent pot. Again, you're not really kashering your chalent pot for Pesach. But just as an example, you cooked your barley in the chalent with barley in the pot. That was cooked on the fire, directly on the stovetop, on an open flame. So that's considered a kli rishon al ha'esh. It was cooked in a pot directly on the fire. So Hagolah must be done in a pot directly on the fire. Let's say you have something that was not directly on the fire. It was a kli rishon that was taken off. It's only used after it's off the fire. I don't know, can't think offhand of a practical example of that. But Hagolah could be done the same way. You could immerse it in a boiling pot of hot water off the stove. Again, it's not practical how you're going to keep your pot boiling off the fire, but theoretically, everything needs Hagolah in an equivalent manner to how it absorbed the chametz. Something that absorbed chametz through Iri Kli Rishon, Kli Rishon was poured or spilled onto it. So the way it would have absorbed chametz is by a spill from a Kli Rishon. An example of that would be a countertop or a sink. It's never going to be put on the fire directly, hopefully. But it certainly could have chametz spilling into it or being poured into it from a pot that was on the fire. So it's only necessary then to kasher, generally speaking, with a pouring hot water on it from a boiling pot. However, there's another problem, is that what's the reason we differentiate, let's just go one step before we get there. Then there's something called klisheni. A klisheni is something that is the pot that you pour it into. In other words, I have my chalent and I pour it from the chalent pot, let's say, to make it simple, I take my chalent pot and pour it directly into a tureen to bring to the table. Well, no, we won't talk about a ladle in the middle because that gets more complicated. I pour it directly. So this tureen now it received an Irui Kli Rishon. It was poured into it directly from the first pot that was on the fire. It itself now is considered a Kli Sheni. So a Kli Sheni is now even one step more removed. And we only need to do Agol on a Kli Sheni. So now the countertop in the sink receives potentially an Irui Kli Rishon. You could have something spilling out of a pot onto the countertop. You could certainly pour from a pot into the sink. Now you could also sometimes have a solid object of hot food, let's say a piece of meat. Someone could take a hot meal, right? For Pesach we're really concerned more, you would have taken the hot challah out of the oven unless you put it directly down on the countertop. Or some piece of tzeit, it fell into the sink. So now that, you might think, is only Irui Kli Rishon. But what's the reason that a Kli Sheni is considered less hot than a Kli Rishon? Why does a Kli Sheni, and by extension an Irui Kli Rishon, why does it absorb less than the pot that was on the fire? So Tysus really asks this. Tysus asks, we see that why do we differentiate between a Kli Rishon and a Kli Sheni? A Kli Rishon is hot and a Kli Sheni could very easily be hot. So Tysus says there's a difference is that a Kli Rishon, since the walls of the pot were heated directly by the fire, the walls of the pot will retain the heat and they will continually heat the food in the pot. They'll preserve the heat of the food, and therefore it has a more intense absorption. Whereas a Kli Sheni, the walls are cold, and they're cooling off the food that goes into them. So therefore, even though the food may be hot, or may have initially been hot, but since it's cooling down, it's not going to absorb as much. An Irui is sort of in between. It's connected to the food that was over the directly on the source of fire, on the source of the heat. However, it's hitting a cold surface. And it's spreading out. Since we're usually talking about a liquid, it's going to spread out, and the entire surface area will come in contact with, whether it's the walls of the pot of the Kli Sheni, and especially if it's, say, a countertop, it's going to spread out and very quickly cool off. A Dover Gush, mainly the Achreinim talk about, sorry, Rishonim, they say that a Dover Gush is sort of in between, because a Dover Gush doesn't spread. So it's only going to come in contact with the cold surface on one side. If you take your hot challah, let's say, and put it down on the countertop, only one side of that challah is being cooled by the counter. If you pour it hot liquid, it spreads out and the whole surface area cools off. The challah retains its heat much better. So there are those who consider a Dover Gush a solid object, to retain the halacha of a Kli Rishon even when it's placed on a cold surface. It's a machlokes, and we take it on more as a chumrah, and until Shabbos, I had a whole shir on that once, but that's a side point, which is, about lemaisa is that a hot object we generally are machmir on, especially for Pesach, to consider like a Kli Rishon. So now you've created a problem that your sink and countertop, we said, is generally an Irui Kli Rishon, but at least occasionally is going to have a Dover Gush, a solid object on it, and therefore, we're going to want to do Hagola in a Kli Rishon on it. Because we don't want to rely on Irui, since it's not always Irui. Now, it's not so easy to do Hagola from a direct Kli Rishon on your countertop, because how are you going to pick up your Shayish, or how are you going to take your stainless steel sink and immerse it in a boiling pot of water? It's not going to happen. So, there's another Eitzah that the Chazal that the Rishonim came up with, Achronim came up with, is an Eben Melubim. If you pour hot water directly from the Kli Rishon, so that's Irui, it's one step removed from a proper Kli Rishon. Because it cools off as it hits the cold surface. But if I'm going to take a red hot rock or piece of metal and put it into the water, so it's going to maintain the heat, it's going to, in effect, what it's going to do is it's going to do what the walls of the Kli Rishon did. It's going to maintain that original heat from when it was on the fire, even as you're pouring it. And you have, in effect, created what's something equivalent to a Kli Rishon. So then, when you use this Eben Melubin, you can create a situation roughly equivalent to a true Kli Rishon when you're doing Irui. The question is practically how to do that. So, I guess let's start then with the practical thing. We'll start with a counter in the kitchen sink. So number one is, when you're talking about a counter in the kitchen sink, Number one issue is you have to clean them very well. Countertops are very difficult practically to clean well because you have a number of seams. You have a seam in the back where the countertop meets the tiles, the harsin on the wall. you usually have a seam in the front where the shayish meets the lip. Generally, we do not, both of those seams are places that could potentially trap food. In general, we do not do hagola on something that has a seam, because it's very difficult to clean in the seam. Any item that's made of two parts requires evaluation by someone who knows Hilchas Hagolas Kalim to make sure that it is a seamless seam, that it is a perfectly smooth joint, to make sure that it cannot trap any food in there which would invalidate the Hagolah. Usually Shayesh does not meet that.
Couldn't you solve the problem with the seams just by dousing it in Economica?
Economica is not going to penetrate. Cool, you'd have to, maybe if you do Eerie with Economica, but
to make the food possibly there.
That will make, you're saying the mamosh, that will get the mamosh out. Right. Let's say you'd have shayish that was pure stone. Let's say we'd find a certain type of shayish that is 100% pure stone. You would still have an additional issue of the practicalities of cleaning it first. Right. There's always a seam. So the stainless steel also is a practice. It's going to be very. It's very difficult to make sure it's completely clean.
Yeah. What's the answer to my question?
The
economic. Would that solve the problem?
It would make the food inedible, but it's still going to be that it's going to prevent the water from coming in contact there. It'll still be a chatzitza. It's not going to get out the food.
It could be a chatzitza. I mean, there's rubber around there too. What constitutes chatzitza? Not just something that's also?
No.
We're not just covering it.
We'll get there. If shayish would be possible to do agol on it, you'd have to first what you'd have to do is you'd have to overcome the practicality of cleaning. First you'd have to find out that your shayish is 100% stone. Then you'd have to find some way of cleaning in all these seams, which I don't know if it's practical, if it's possible to clean all the seams. So getting to what you said is, I do not recommend, and I think that most places do not recommend kashering shayish, even if your shayish would be 100% stone. It's highly recommended, I think it's almost inevitable, that you must cover your shayish. Now, when covering shayish, there's a couple different materials that can be used. You can use something like a contact paper or aluminum foil, but it's not so practical because they're likely to tear. They have PVC, which is basically linoleum, what we in America we call linoleum. That's much thicker, it's much stronger. It also solves one problem. Some people have a minug that they kasher their shayish and then cover it. It gets the shayish very nice and shiny and clean when you pour boiling water on it. If you enjoy pouring boiling water on your shayish, then go ahead and do it as long as you're careful not to spill it on yourself. But it's really not necessary. If you're going to cover your shayish with just contact paper, so then you would need to kasher the shayish, which as we mentioned isn't so simple to do. It's not necessarily possible to do. But then you would need to, because it's very likely that the contact paper will rip on Pesach. If you're going to cover your shayish with PVC, with linoleum, and you're going to tape around the sides with a good thick, binding tape, like an electrical tape, the plastic waterproof tape, so that it's not necessary to kasher the shayish. There is no need to pour boiling water on your shayish.
What does the tape do?
It does two things. Number one is it holds down the shayish. Number two is it covers. I can, for example, many houses, I know my house, there's a lip around the edge of the shayish. Some people, maybe the shayish rounded at the edge. And then you have to have some, in any event, you need some way of covering that edge. The PVC, by nature of its being thick, will not round the corner. Unless you have you have some kind of PVC that does. The PVC I have at home does not round the corner. So in order to hold it down and to cover that edge, you'll need to use a tape. So in the back, you have to get it that it'll stay down up against the backsplash. Not more practically. Well, because you don't want water, say, spilling over the shayish and spilling over the edge of the PVC onto your shayish and pooling there. That you could then let's say if hot water would spill off the edge of your PVC, it could remove chametz flavor from the shayish. If it pools, you could then be putting a pot on Pesach in a pool of water that is tam chametz. You also have, just taking considerations, what you've done to your backsplash. Say, what I do in my house personally is I tape PVC on the backsplash and on the shayish, and so then, just practically, I mean, I don't want the water seeping down between them and getting under the PVC. But theoretically, if you have it well covered, if you have some way that there is no gap there, there's no way the pot can touch the backsplash and touch the shayish there, you don't necessarily have to tape it in the back. I'm more talking about in the front. I was, I guess, referring the front of the shayish, where the lip is or the rounded edge. You'll need some way of holding down the PVC, and you need some way of covering that edge that you're not by mistake, say, gonna, if you, you know, you're holding the pot a little low as you approach the shayish, bang it against the edge of the shayish that was not kashered nor covered.
Right.
And splash back on. So yes, backsplashes should be covered. They should be cleaned well. They should be cleaned well and covered. They don't necessarily need to be covered with PVC because they're not getting the heavy usage of shayish. Shayish, you're putting heavy things on the counter and off. A backsplash, but again with the backsplash, you should be careful. Even if you're using something more like, a lot of people I know say tape aluminum foil on their backsplash. If it's a strong enough aluminum foil, if you're careful that it doesn't rip, that would certainly be enough. But the backsplash should be covered. That's what I would certainly. Highly recommended. Especially because most backsplashes, in, at least in my experience, are ceramic tiles, which are difficult to clean 100%. So it should be covered. Yeah.
What about the underside of the...
Yeah, we'll get there too. I have a list, and I... Yes, that... But it's a logical progression from where we're going is, so in addition to cleaning and covering the backsplash, the underneath of the top cabinets also must be cleaned very well. It's a little harder to cover them there, but you have the problem of splashing and the steam rising off an open pot that could come back down. So it would definitely be recommended to cover if possible. It certainly must be cleaned very well with a detergent, with a cleansing agent, a caustic agent, something like that. Okay. Fine. So shayish should be covered, not necessarily to kasher once you're covering it with something strong. My logical point, let's go to the sink. The sink, if you have a ceramic sink, it cannot be kashered, and you have to cover it or use a sink insert. If you have a stainless sink, so stainless steel certainly can be kashered, it's difficult practically to clean it very well. If you can overcome that and you can find a way of cleaning if you can clean it all around very well, you can get into the seam there. So then you could kasher a stainless sink with pouring boiling water, but we have to overcome then the problem of dover gush. So some people use the standard, as it says in the Gemara, they put a rock on the stovetop and they'll throw that in the pot of boiling water and make it boil over as they're pouring it. It's dangerous. It's not recommended unless you have the proper equipment or experience. I don't recommend doing that in your own house. You have to be careful. I mean, I've heard a story of someone who decided he wanted to be really machmir. He was concerned. He poured the boiling water in his sink, and then he threw the red hot rock into the sink because he wanted the water boiling in the sink. And he had absolutely no shilas on his sink for Pesach because he had to replace it. it burst the bottom out of the sink. One better solution would be that since we mentioned here, that there's a couple considerations with a sink. Number one is the dover gush is not a kli rishon. We are generally machmer on it to consider it similar to a kli rishon. It is not a kli rishon. It is, l'maisa, it's a kli sheni, or it's an iri kli rishon. Second of all is that even the Rambam agrees mi'ikr hadin, that the bottom line, b'di'evad or shasat chak case is, that you can go by the majority usage of an item. Sinks, certainly the majority usage is not solid objects. It's liquids being poured in them. So we have two considerations why iri alone would be enough for a sink. So we're not going to just do iri, but there is a solution that, as the Rav also mentioned, is that would work, that is not, maybe, it's not a completely a kli rishon, but in this situation will allow it is. If you're doing hagolah from an electric kettle, from, let's say, an urn, you have a big, 10-liter urn, but something big enough that it'll be practical to do your sink, and you have it plugged in, and it's boiling. Now, the heating element is is al ha'esh. So now when I pour from the urn, let's say I have an extension cord or a long enough cord on my urn, I can pour it directly onto the surface of the sink while it's still plugged in and still boiling. So now that's better than a regular iri kli rishon, because the classic iri kli rishon, I have my pot on the stove and I now take it off the stove to pour it. It's not on the fire at the moment I'm pouring it. And that's considered a standard iri kli rishon. The Chazon Ish holds that an iri kli rishon, when it's still on the fire, the Chazon Ish is talking about a different case. The Chazon Ish is talking about, which is not a topic, but just in 1 minute, Chazon Ish is talking about a case more of, let's say on Shabbos, you want to fill up a cup of hot water directly from your urn that's on the fire. So he says that cup is still considered a kli rishon. It's not a kli sheni, since it was filled up directly from a pot that was on the fire. Now, we're not necessarily machmer for the Chazon Ish on Shabbos. However, when it comes to kashering your sink, which, as we mentioned, there's already two considerations why a regular iri kli rishon alone would be enough. So it would be enough, according to many paiskim, I believe that I spoke to the Rav, that the Rav agrees with this, is that in such a case, if you can pour from your electric urn while it's still plugged in and boiling, that would be enough that will rely on what the Chazon Ish considers that a real kli rishon, to satisfy the chumra that you'll need a real kli rishon for your sink. So if someone has a stainless sink and they can get it clean enough, they could kasher it with a plugged-in urn. Yes?
Yeah. That's a ceramic sink.
Okay.
So we use incense. Okay. So what if the water rises? You can't clean it so well and take up because...
Right.
If the water rises hot, what do you do?
It's a problem. Especially if the water's hot.
Every so often, but...
Right. Right, it's not such a serious problem, b'di'evid, because whatever hot water is going to come in contact with the surface of the ceramic is already going to be a klisheni. So a lot of people are machmer on klisheni on Pesach. So it certainly, first of all, is for the drain is an issue. A lot of people pour like a bleach down the drain before Pesach. Anything the drain is probably pugum without that. It's best to, if you see your sins backing up, you should stop using the hot water until it cleans out. It's not necessary to throw a case. Yeah, there's a paper towel or something.
My sink, there's no inserts that fit. Can I just take like a plastic bin and just wash in there and dump out? I mean,
the main thing is that you're...
But I don't think I can clean that edge, you know, mm-hmm. where it's joined.
Right. So in such a case, the point of the plastic bin is that now your pots are not coming in direct contact with the sink. So then that's the point. The point of an insert is that I want that my Pesach dishes or whatever I'm cleaning in the sink will not come in direct contact with the chametz tig sink. Beyond that, that would be fine. That would be very good. A rack in the bottom would be, yeah, would also, but then you have the problem with touching the sides. So you have to be careful not to touch the sides. Yes. Rust stains do not have to come off. Any tiny piece of anything stuck on it has to come off. It has to be spotlessly clean. From anything that's raised, again, a stain, a discoloration of the metal itself does not have to be removed.
Now, where it meets the shayer, there's forking around it. Is that causing the forking, what is the forking? Is it a hummus or?
The cotton is a problem. The thing is, the caulking is a problem because you're not going to have the direct hagola on where the caulking is.
No, the caulking is like right under. They put the caulking first, and they put the sink down. So some is sticking out.
So if the caulking is on the body, there's two different ways of mounting stainless sinks in my experience. There's bottom mounted and top mounted. If the stainless sink comes up from the bottom and it's basically glued to the bottom of the shayish, it's usually supported by a pole. So now that's more problematic because there's a surface, there's an area of the sink that the hot water cannot come in contact with. You're right, but the food spreads out through the metal and it can come back through. However, if you have a top-mounted sink where it drops down into the hole, so then you can contact the entire inner surface. You're getting completely one side of the sink. You're anyway not doing hagol on the bottom of the sink. So there, that would be okay.
That would be what?
That would be okay. As long as you can clean, you've got one surface completely clean, that would be good enough.
You mentioned using one of these big urns. Yes. There a problem using a small kumkum two or three times?
Then you have to be careful that each time you pour it, then you'll have to dry before you do again. You can do Hagola piecemeal.
You just have to be careful where
you have to know which part you did.
Dry it and then do the
right, same. Right.
Okay. Is it best to do top down? But, even if you're using one big urn, you really can't pour on the entire sink at the same moment.
Right.
Should you start
bottom up?
Bottom up.
You got the faucets. That's next. Okay.
Sure. Do you think we could go through everything and then personal questions? Can we put
yeah,
in?
Okay. Fine. So go quick over. So that's where I'm going to go, which is we should have done. Quick overview, step by step, of everything in the kitchen and then specific questions. Because, yeah, we're getting near the end. Okay. So let's just try to keep to a logical progression here, which isn't necessarily how I wrote it. Okay, so the backsplash, as we said, have to be cleaned and also should be covered. Top of the bottom of the top cabinets, also cleaned, preferably covered. Faucets. Faucets must be cleaned very well. The aerator, that's the little filter on the tip that screws out, should be removed and preferably replaced for Pesach with a new one. The boiling hot water should be poured over the faucet. Some people have a chumrah to cover the entire faucet with a bag to prevent contact with it. It's a nice chumrah, it's not necessary, but boiling hot water should be poured over the entire faucet before you kasha your sink. Okay.
You're saying the handle also?
The handle's not as necessary. You're not going to have hot food contacting the handle. Well, I should say maybe it depends what kind of handle you have. The two knobs on the side, so I don't see hot food easily contacting it. However, you have to make sure it's very clean. It might be a good idea to cover it just because you could have, if you can't clean it perfectly. But it's not necessarily the kasha. Okay, that was the faucet. Okay, fridge and freezer do not need to be kashered, despite what a certain sefer says. They must be cleaned very well, and if you don't feel you can clean the shelves of your fridge very well, then it would be advisable to cover them in a way that will not interfere with the airflow of the refrigerator. However, if you can clean it very well, it's not necessary to cover. It's advisable, but it's not necessary. Oven we mentioned, self-cleaning oven, you can self-clean. However, even a self-cleaning oven, an American self-cleaning oven gets above 900 degrees is sufficient. You can, to kasha. Even an American self-cleaning oven, my understanding is the door does not get as hot as the body of the oven. Therefore, it's advisable to cover the door with thick aluminum foil. I have not confirmed it, that European self-cleaning ovens do not reach as hot of a temperature as American self-cleaning ovens. It's something I did not clarify yet. If anyone knows exactly what temperature they get up to, I'd be happy to hear, but I don't know. It was something. If you have a European self-cleaning oven, you have to find out what temperature it gets to. If the self-clean cycle gets above 900 degrees Fahrenheit, that's considered enough. Okay. If you do not have a self-cleaning oven, if you have a regular oven, it's generally advised by most poskim that the oven should not be used on Pesach. There are some poskim who are makel. I don't advise it. If he rubs it differently, so listen to him. But I don't advise using a non-self-clean oven on Pesach. Microwave oven should not be kashered for Pesach. As I mentioned in the previous year, but my opinion is a microwave oven can never be kashered. A dishwasher is not considered kasherable for Pesach. If you have food processor, blender, mixer, etc., these things, if they should not be cleaned and kashered for Pesach. It's advisable to have new ones. Baruch Hashem, nowadays these things are not nearly as expensive as they were once upon a time. And there is a Mishnah Brura. I'm taking a drop out of context, but Mishnah Brura is talking about a specific case, but I think that it can be applied as a general rule. Mishnah Brura states that things that when possible one should avoid kashering for Pesach, one should buy separate things for Pesach. He is talking about a specific case, but I think that it would really apply to anything that's not Anything that's not straightforward and simple to kasher, it's highly advisable, when possible, to buy separate for Pesach. So small appliances are generally problematic. They're not possible to clean thoroughly. Also, most of them are plastic, which, as we said, is not... Reb Moshe holds you can't kasher. Kitchen table, there's a lot of talk in Shulchan about how to kasher a table. The bottom line is, you're not going to eat on your kitchen table without covering it. And once you're covering it, cover it with a good thick layer, or a couple thick layers, and then it's not necessary to kasher it anymore. It should be cleaned well. Stovetop. Stovetop must be cleaned very well. It should be covered with thick aluminum foil. The grates on top of the stove would need libun chomer. Not all of them, most of them can tolerate it, but they need a thorough going over with a blowtorch. Again, it's better if possible to get separate ones for Pesach, or alternatively to cover them with a thick layer of aluminum foil, to clean them very well with a caustic cleaner, and then cover them with thick aluminum foil. Or a third possibility, which is the most practical maybe, is for those who have self-cleaning ovens, you can put those in the oven when it runs through the self-clean cycle, and then you have done your blowtorching on the grates. The racks, whatever. This little circle in the middle does not need kashering because there's a constant fire on it. It's basically a constant leaving. So it's not necessary to kasher. Good question. Okay. I don't know how relevant it is today anymore, but if people have something like a becher or whatever, if they don't have a Pesach becher, which, again, it's one of those things that I think is advisable today. Silver is not so expensive. Most people, I think, can afford a becher for Pesach. But if you can't, and you have to, so then a becher needs hagola, since it is often washed with hot chametz. And so again, you would have to clean it very well. The more fancy ones with engraving are difficult. They have to be cleaned very well, wait 24 hours, and immersed in boiling hot water. Just another interesting point. What do you do with people who have braces or fillings? So I heard that Rav Heineman once in a shir, I think partially out of it, I think he'd been asked the question too many times, and lost he would ever wanted to say a bit of a sharp line. I don't think he meant it seriously. But when someone asked him what they should do about their braces, he told them they should either gargle with boiling water for 5 minutes, or put their head in the microwave on high for 1 minute. He was joking. I assure you. Realistically, but what should be done is, you should clean them very well. Braces are difficult, but you have to clean them very, very well. Many place them advise, I would advise that someone who has braces or fillings should not eat hot chametz for 24 hours before Pesach. More than that, it's not really necessary. You want to try to gargle with the hottest water you can tolerate, it's not necessary. You want to, it's a homer, but it's risky. Someone who has a removable retainer, bite plate, dentures, whatever it is, it is possible to kasher them. They don't need more than iri kli rishon. You should check to make sure that they can tolerate the temperature of boiling water being poured over them. If they can, then it's highly advisable to do. If not, so then you didn't do it with hot chametz either, then you should put them in the hottest water they can tolerate. Soak them in the hottest water they can tolerate, and you do the best you can. Clean them well, again. Okay, I think that's basically covering most. If there's any kitchen items I missed completely, please let me know. And then otherwise I'll take personal questions. Or other, yeah.
You're not using your oven, do you need to even clean it?
Again, like I said with the toaster oven, with the toaster oven you can shake it out of probably your big oven you're not going to be able to shake out. But yes, take a damp shmata, paper towel, wipe out any pieces of chametz in it, pieces of dirt. Tape it closed and right.
So getting rid of your stovetop and stuff, does that have to go to the room? You put it on top of your cabinets and stuff?
That we've put in the... It should be in a closed place. It shouldn't be... even if you have the Israeli ovens where you can lower the lid and tape it closed, that would also be enough. You don't want to by accident use it on Pesach.
Put it on the top of your
cabinet. It's advisable to tape that top cabinet closed like you probably do with all the cabinets that have your chametz.
On top of my cabinet.
On top of the cabinet. If you're doing that, it's probably better to bag it.
Is it possible, talking about the shayish, if it is pure stone, can't you just cover the seams, the cracks, and then kosher everything else? I mean, you said you can do piecemeal kosher.
Right. So you're saying to kosher, cover each of the seams?
I mean, there's big pieces
right.
of koshering everything.
You said it's not natural.
So you say all the places you're gonna the Pesach food would come in contact with are either kashered, and the other places that you didn't kash, because it's not metal. With metal, we say that the tam spreads throughout it. With shayish, it's not going to spread as much. So I have to think about it. I never thought of it before. I don't know if people would want to do that, because you're taping. It means you're taping the entire back seam with a backsplash. You're taping the front where the lip is. Any place where pieces of shayish are joined together, you're going to have a stripe of tape going across it. Theoretically, maybe you could do that. I don't know. I don't know if you'd be gaining, but I have to think about whether theoretically it would work. But. Okay, in the back. Yes. You have to be right. So you have to be careful that as you're pouring, there's no interruption in the flow. Ideally is, you should pour every single square inch of the sink should get a direct flow from the pot, which is not so practical. Lemaisa, the placement of generally make with it, as long as it was a continuous flow. In other words, it hit and it's within, you know, let's say whatever, a certain limited radius of where the flow hits is good. In other words, theory, you could do it. You have to be careful. You have to pour. So, in other words, what you don't just take your big urn and give a splash. You have to pour around and around and circle around or whatever to make sure that you get almost, you basically get the entire area. Exactly why the spread, but yes, it's something that needs care. It's also, again, I really recommend, my personal recommendation is that people generally should use inserts or cover their sinks, even if they have a stainless sink. Because it's difficult to kosher properly, it can be dangerous to kosher properly. If someone, I would recommend people really cover, but if you want to kosher, this is how to do it. I don't take responsibility for the safety issues. So, people get burns from koshering. It happens.
When you're doing the iwer from a big Shabbos mechan, mm-hmm. can it be just a plastic spout, or does it have to be over the top directly from the metal?
No, it could be through the spout. Could be through the spout. Yes.
When you talk about chumitz that it's not edible, so what's the issue of checking your soaps and shampoos and all these kind of things?
Checking them, you're saying things you're not using on Pesach?
Well, I know that the Sephardim don't change their bath and shampoos and conditioners and things like that. Ashkenazi tend to.
There's different opinions on it. There's some people, first of all, there's an issue with things you're actually using on Pesach. There are those who say sicha kashtia. Thing the anointing is like drinking. Since some of it gets absorbed through the skin, it's as if you're eating, as if you're drinking. So if you're actually using it on Pesach, so there are those who are concerned that it's more similar to eating. It's not just an issue of possessing it.
That's not a universal Ashkenazi issue.
To the best of my knowledge, it's not something that's divided between Ashkenazim and Sephardim.
Okay. And when you talk about a kasayis, are you talking about an item or combined
like this point? Okay, good. If a specific item that's a kazayas is definitely a problem, if it's combined within a certain object, in other words, if you had a pot that had lots of crumbs stuck on it, and within that pot you had a kazayas together, so the pot will combine all those crumbs to be one kazayas, even though each crumb is less than a kazayas, but if all together or more, it's a problem. Your house is not a problem. If you have a crumb in one room and a crumb in a different room, the house is not going to combine it all to a kazayis. There is discussion whether it's something like a refrigerator, if it's going to depend whether, if it's more than machzik, aboim sov, osu enayich, that's going to be considered, there's a question of something like a refrigerator is going to be considered more like a container or more like a room. But in generally speaking, you are correct that an object could combine the crumbs to be a kazayis, but the house will not.
I'm a freezer. The shelves are double. They're like racks.
Okay.
They're double. and I get like sesame seeds inside, like the meat might be crumbs stuck between these two things, and I'll sit there with a toothbrush or something. Mm-hmm. If I spray it, do I have to really get between these cracks and get every single crumb out?
You don't have to get rid of all of it, you just have to make sure that no Pesach food will come in contact with it.
Right, so the top shelf...
If the top is completely clean, that's fine. If you can wrap it with like a saran wrap, that's even better. Alternatively,
what?
Wrap the shelf.
The shelf.
You can wrap the shelf. Or you can only put food directly down, covered. I mean, but these things are chumras. The bottom line is, if you can make sure that the surface that the food or the pot's going to come in contact with is completely clean, that is, bottom line, that is sufficient. It's, you know, there's chumras to cover the shelf or to only put in covered pots, but it's not necessary. Yes.
One has a stainless steel sink, and say the shayis is going on top of the lid.
Okay.
So, according to what we heard, you can't really kosher it.
If the shayis is over the lip of the stick, yes.
Is there any reason to try to kosher it anyway if you're using an insert? Is there any reason to put boiling water in it, or just you're just wasting your time to put the...
You're not completely wasting your time, because as someone raised the issue is, you can have hot water that will pool in the sink. So... You're kashering it is at least getting out 90%. You're getting out 90-95% of the bleias chumas. So now you'll have less. It'll be less problematic. I'm not saying you're obligated to. It's not a requirement. There is an advantage to it. If you boil bleach, it doesn't penetrate what's inside. What's absorbed inside. It only will get to what's on the surface. They should not be. Again, ask your rav. But there are people who permit non-self-cleaning ovens because they consider it's at least libun kal. You can turn the oven to the hottest temperature. They consider that libun kal, even though usually for Pesach we require libun chamur. There are those who are makel on it, but generally speaking, it's advised not to. Ask your rav. Absolutely. Yeah. From the oven. Okay.
Yeah.
If you cover it with, as I mentioned, if you cover it with thick aluminum foil, that's also good enough.
And
if it's well.
Plata should not
be used. Actually, they should not be kashered. If you wrap it with, if you clean it well and wrap it with thick aluminum foil, it could be used, but it shouldn't be kashered. Yes. You better kosher from top down. I'm sorry, top down. Top down is better. But it's one of those things, it's better, it's an advantage of using a bigger urn and doing it at once. When you do from the top down, there is a problem though, that when you still, whatever you, I mean it's a problem whenever you kosher anything with Iwi, is that when you hit one spot, so that spot you've koshered. Let's say we're going to say the first inch or two it spreads out around that, it still kashers. The water continues to spread beyond that, it's still going to be very warm, it's going to be hot, it's not going to be hot enough anymore to kasher, but now it's been it's been used with hot water within 24 hours. You don't have to wait, so if you pour slowly, I'm not saying you have to, but you get into the question of why don't I now have to wait another 24 hours between each time I pour it. So, if you're using a significant quantity, doing it all within a couple seconds, it's an advantage. The bottom line is, it's still going to be good without. But it brings that to illustrate that while we have to know what the bottom line halacha is, what the accepted halacha is, and what we can do practically to make chametz in a reasonable oifen, a lot of these things are not 100% lechatchila. A lot of these things are not the ideal way of doing things, necessarily, and so there are good reasons for a lot of the chumras people have. Again, if the chumra is going to detract significantly from your simchas yomtiv, so then you have to ask a shayla of your rav or whatever, and he'll tell you which chumras are worth doing and not worth doing, and, but there is a good reason for a lot of these chumras people do. Some of them not, but some of them there are good reasons for. Yes.
We have sinks that do not have aerators. They have special pull-out
hose pipe.
Okay.
What do I do?
Switch it.
What?
They probably have an aerator.
I think my mother said they do have, they may have an aerator that can be switched at the end there.
No.
It doesn't, sure, okay.
You can switch the whole thing. Can't you switch the whole thing?
So I don't know that you're obligated to do that for Pesach. If it can be clean, if you can clean it completely well, the main problem with the aerator is you have the tiny holes where certainly food can splash on it and it's very difficult to clean completely. So you should clean it completely and pour boiling water on it. And that should be enough. Yes?
You mentioned in kashering the sink to kasher the faucet first.
All part of the top down. You're gonna have. It's better because that way you're not. I said the thing first because otherwise what happens? You've already kashered your sink, and now you're gonna have the chametz from the faucet going into your already kashered sink. It is, but I'm just saying it's better to do it first. If you put it this way, let's say you said, "Well, I kashered my sink, and then I realized I forgot to do my faucet." Yes, you can still kasher your faucet. But
you have the same problem when you're kashering your
shayish. Right, exactly.
When you do the
faucet, I would do the sink before the faucet, before the shayish.
If you do that to the faucet, should that be 24 hours earlier? You could do it right before you do the
faucet. No, you do it all the same time.
Why would you do the sink before the shayish? Do the shayish first.
Because then you have a problem, you have to wait another 24 hours. Yes.
Lining all the cabinets and drawers with paper, is that just a chumrah?
It depends how well you clean your cabinets. If you clean them that they're absolutely spotless, it's a chumrah. If you're worried that you might have missed a crumb or a speck or something, so then it's more important. It's a practical chumrah. It's not essential. It's a practical chumrah. Generally, there's seams there, so it can be difficult to clean spotlessly. Yes.
You said you should dry. If you're doing it a couple of times, you should dry it in between.
Right. Because otherwise, the water that was there that's cooled down will cool off. When you're pouring the next time, you're essentially pouring on water that's on the sink. So the first level, it's not getting a direct flow. It's hitting the other water, the cold water first.
So you're taking the strainer out.
You take out the strainer. You can put a new one. This hardware store is for the standard faucet. I'm sorry, when you're the strainer from the faucet or from the sink itself? Yeah, you should take out the... That's probably something that should be replaced, if possible. Yes?
You speak of pattern of thick aluminum.
Yes.
What's considered thinking that?
Something that definitely won't tear, even when you're putting pots on and off it, on and off it for 7 days. There isn't a specific number of microns that's necessary. It's a practical... Yeah, I mean, that's why they make the thicker, but I can't tell, there is no halacha that, the 80 microns is not good and that you need 100 or whatever. It's a practical,
Plata?
And if the aluminum foil rips in the middle, so put a new aluminum foil before you use it again. Plata, someone else says, I said, plata cannot be kashered, but it may be, if you clean it very well and cover it, there are those who allow using it. With aluminum thicker, yeah, cover it well with aluminum foil. Again, it's a type of thing though that's not so terribly expensive. I can't talk to each individual. I don't know you as individuals, but it's something generally people buy a new one for Pesach.
I have a May Eden cooler.
Okay.
First of all, I'm not sure if they may add water in the jugs that goes to the Pesach.
It should be. I've been to the factory.
My question is the jugs. For the jugs, they really.
Oh, they recycle. Oh, okay, so that's a different
story. Would anything that be in there really be bottled before Pesach anyway, realistically?
It would. We try to avoid that. We try to avoid things being bottled before Pesach also, though.
May it if water is on present, coming spring?
It should be going piped directly from the spring into the bottling factory without any coming in contact with humans.
But if the jugs are okay, the actual spouts, which are plastic, you have to replace that.
I don't know. It's certainly a problem because a person would offer, I mean, if you know you never put anything in there under it other than an empty pitcher or whatever, so fine. But if you fill up a pot from it, you add water to a chalent from it or something, so you certainly could have bleus on it. It's plastic, it's not kasherable, according to Reb Moshe at least. So,
get
replacement ones. It would certainly be advisable. Because even to say the cover, it's not going to be practical because it could get up the inside of the hole.
They sell it.
I would certainly be advisable then.
Halakhically, is one type of sink better than another?
So, I mean, that's theoretically kasherable, and the other ones aren't kasherable.
Even if it's stainless steel?
Stainless steel, because you have the problem of the seam where it's glued onto the shayish. So if you want to be able to kasher it, you're better, I guess, with the top knot.
Can you use metal dish racks, like the ones that are in your aisle?
Okay.
You know that you put your plates, when you wash your dishes, mm-hmm. Can you use those on Pesach?
If it's spotlessly clean, theoretically you could use it, right? It doesn't get half food on it, it's clean. You theoretically could use it, I don't picture myself doing that in my own house, but I don't, putting my Pesach dishes where my Chametz dishes were. But, theoretically, yes, you could. If you can get it spotlessly clean, you can do it. Okay, is that all? Oh, one more. Okay. The problem is with these urns is when you fill up things from the spout, they splatter back on the urn. I mean, I know my urn at home has spots all over the outside of the urn. Things do splatter back onto the urn, and the urn itself is hot. So they will get absorbed in it, even though you'd say the splattering is not just an eerie from a cliché, it's actually being reheated while the spots that they're on the surface of the urn. On the spout and onto the body of the urn, potentially. But also the spout. And then the spout's not really, the spot's not really cleanable and kasherable. So. You could have that also. The steam's less problematic because the steam, unless you're putting actual chametz under it. But with the hot water is going to draw flavor out of the cup, let's say, and then that's going to go in the steam and go up is already far enough removed that it's much less problematic. I still wouldn't use it for Pesach. Unless you're saying you've never put anything under it other than an empty cup. But if you've put pots of food under it, I don't think that would work because you just have an issue with the cleanliness of it, if nothing else.
Yeah. The same hot water urn you can use for the thing?
Yeah, you can use the same.
The reverse osmosis water filter system.
Okay. Not that I'm aware of.
But sometimes you have the spout where the water comes out is over the sink.
Okay.
It might be a piece that's plastic that water comes out of. And so if you put your hot pots and pans in the sink, so then you can have...
Okay, but the system itself's not a problem. You see the spout, right? So you...
How do you...
Are you going to have... I don't know if you're going to have... You know, that much hot steam coming up and hitting. Because you're not filling hot. That's only giving off cold water, not hot water.
It gives off cold water.
So if you had
it. Let's say you take your pot of hot spaghetti and you put it into the sink to drain it.
And the steam
comes up onto that spout.
Okay, so it would be worth pouring hot water over the spout. If you think it's plastic, I would think in such a case you could. Yeah, it's only steam from. I would think that you could rely on pouring hot water over it.
We use the chametz sticker urn.
Yes. Because we don't want the Pesach urn to become chametz, because the steam will come up and hit the Pesach. If not, then the world, but it's advised to use the chametz urn. Yes. What a lot of people do is they also, because of a lot of these considerations we've mentioned, they'll do hagola on a sink multiple times. They'll say do hagola three times on the sink. Because that way, even though this time you hit this inch and miss that inch, but the second
each time?
What? No, they don't. Not without a 24-hour break. So I would say, and that's certainly what you could do is if you could use the chametz urn the first time, you can use the Pesach. The second time, you can use the Pesach urn, and that way you can have two urns up boiling at the same time simultaneously.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
If anyone has any more questions, please feel free to come up.
So she's officially finished. Anyone has private questions?
This was good.
Okay.
And. Somebody left and told me, asked me to pass on the share was incredibly clear.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Shakar. Great. Your mecham gets to a boiling point?
Yeah, sure.
It's the mecham, the Shabbos?
Yeah.
It's got a Shabbos thing. It boils away.
Really?
You can't get the water there.
The things with the two switches on them?
The whole thing can't be
cooked. Yeah, sure.
Even though the dairy that your pots are not going to be getting
in. I guess you're going to have the point of contact with the
mecham. And then someone slips away.
Because it's metal will be more problematic.
Are you saying that it can't be kosher because that area can't be kosher, therefore the tom from that area will go off the whole thing?
Presumably, yes. It would be similar to the idea of, let's say you have a knife or something, where the handle is separate, the handle is silver and the blade is stainless, so if there's any gap at all, at the seam there, you can't kosher the whole knife. You can't just wrap that place and kosher the rest of it. One answer with such a thing with a knife or whatever you have is there you could leave them kawa. Because leave them kawa will burn out whatever would be in the gap. Obviously, you sink it after leave them kawa.
So, and more about the, at work, we have a hot water for making tea and stuff. Mm-hmm. Just put it away.
Can you just go get a new cook?
Nobody who got tea is going to be there over there at the file, but okay. I'm responsible for them, so I just tell them to use it.